It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Yes, hello, I'm back. Jason Snell's here, Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay. We will talk about the Mac Pro. What the heck is going on? June 5th is WWDC. What will Apple talk about? What will they show? There are some clues in the Find My database. We'll also talk about Apple savings. CarPlay, yes, Redux. I know you talked about it last week, but I have some opinions about GM dropping it. And maybe a movie or two. It's all coming. We'll talk about it in a bit on Mac Break Weekly. Stay tuned.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 867, recorded Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. Take him to the train station. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by AG1 by Athletic Greens. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about Apple. Hello. I've been gone for a while. Fortunately, we had some talented people to hold down the fort. Thank you, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com. You did the first of the 3 weeks I was gone. I appreciate that.
Happy to do it.
Zeppelin.flights@jsnell.
Sure, if you want to go the Mastodon route, that's how you do it.
Still, you're not still on the hell site, are you? Twitter. You're not.
I have various blockers and I read a sports list there. That's about it.
I do kind of miss the news input that Twitter used to be, but it's so much crap now. It makes me unhappy. Thank you. Anyway, I appreciate it. Also, Rosemary Orchard and Micah Sargent. Appreciate your guys' hard work keeping this show afloat. Andy Iannocco, it's great to see you again. I missed you, my friend.
I missed you too. I enjoyed seeing you guys as posts to Instagram and other non-Twitter social media. You had a lot of fun. You went to a lot of places. You saw a lot of things, and it looks like you comported. You were fine ambassadors of the United States. You weren't just taking blue crayons and making a mess out of 200-year-old monuments.
No, in every respect, we were kind and generous. I think it was 8 countries in 21 days. Which is that's a lot. If you include Vatican City, which you should, it's the smallest country nonetheless. Also, Alex Lindsay from officehours.global and 090.media. Your eyebrows are getting bushier. I like it.
I know.
I like it. Are you going for that?
No, I just haven't. I haven't gotten around to cutting them yet. So,
well, I'm going to the hairdresser Thursday. I'll meet you there. How about that?
Friday for me.
Yeah. Alex and I. We're on the same schedule somehow.
I'm way behind. I think you get your haircut probably 3 times for every time I get up there.
Yeah, that's true. So, I get it. Yeah, so I'm because I don't want to look. Actually, mine's a little shaggy because I missed it.
And then I'm just like, oh, I got another project.
I know. Who wants to sit in a chair and find out all the gossip and Petaluma and all that? Yeah, I don't want to do that. I guess it's really still rumor central until June. But catch me up on the latest thinking. Still no Mac Pro. What the heck? Jason, is there an inside story to that? No Mac Pro? Why?
I think there's some speculation that since John Ternus did his little wink to the camera about it 400 days ago or whatever, but who's counting? And the answer is, I think Mac Rumors is counting. So I there's some people wondering if maybe they either had a hiccup or they made a design change, that it seems unlikely that Apple would promise a Mac Pro in the near future, and then more than a year later, there's not been a word about it. And now we've reached the point where Mark Gurman at Bloomberg is saying that it will not be shown at WWDC either. And so that pushes the, you know, and again, it's the Mac Pro. It doesn't sell in high volume. They can afford to have it come later. It's not going to hurt them, but it is curious, right? Like that they, that they did that whole, oh, that's a story for another day, wink, and then nothing for more than a year about it. That's very mysterious. And Mark Gurman says it's out there, but like, did they, we don't know, like, did they adjust the specs, or is this something about the M2 chip, or are they going to delay to the M3? Like, we, that's the stuff where we just don't know.
I have to say, I do have to point out, it is now 404 days. Coincidence? I don't know.
Mac Pro not found.
Well, and I don't think there's, I don't see a lot of people, like, the people aren't going up on whatever social network that they're using and hammering Apple for a Mac Pro.
No, that's true.
It is. I think that, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the studios are doing so well, the Mac Minis are doing so well.
Well, that's the funny thing. When I left here, the studio was dead. And then I came back and it's back. So no, rumors, you just don't know. You can't trust a rumor.
Again, I think that the thing is that it's the performance that we're getting out of some of these machines.
I love
is
my
so good
studio.
That,
yeah.
the group that's looking for that, you know, for the Mac Pro has gotten super small, you know, and so I think that that's part of it. I think also, you know, it may be related to learnings from these machines, like their high performance. Here's how people are using them.
But here's the hazard. People are going to do what you have done, Alex, which is buy a PC instead when they really need the performance.
I don't feel that, like I did. I bought, but the PCs that I bought, I still would have to buy even a Mac Pro because I was using NVIDIA cards that need to be a NVIDIA card. I had four Quadra cards, you know, in one PC.
Right.
I'm not going to be able to do that with a Mac Pro. So it wouldn't really affect people like me to do that. And I think, again, an enormous number of people that didn't have a solution when the Mac Pro came out, we really didn't have a Mac equivalent to a Mac Studio Ultra, you know. And so when you have a Mac Studio Ultra with a ton of RAM, which I don't have, I have a Max with a lot of RAM, and it runs pretty fast, you know. And so
I
think that the issue is
super happy with it. Yeah, it does everything.
Yeah, so the
but I'm not.
So I think that there was a huge jump. There was like MacBooks and iMacs, and then there was the Mac Pro. With the Studio, I think that's a much foggier place, and they really have to have the Mac Pro be something that is, I think it has to be extensible. It has to be, you have to be able to put cards in it. You have to be able to do, you know, change the RAM. You have to be able to do some things like that to really make it, or it's not going to, I just don't think a lot of people who are using Studios are going to necessarily jump on the Mac Pro. You know, they're going to be like, well, it doesn't, you know, if it's just a taller Mac Studio, I don't, you know, for a lot more money, it's a really hard hill to go up. And so I think that Apple has to, you know, figure out, you know, what they want to do there. And I think that's still an open area.
Are they waiting for the M3, Andy?
I don't see. I don't know that they're necessarily waiting for the M3 so much as they're observing the buzz phrase, this unprecedented worldwide macroeconomic situation where sales of all technology are way, way down. I think that they're in a position where they're like, whereas 5 years ago, if they were at this state of readiness on rolling out a Mac Pro, they would simply schedule it and go. I think now they're in a position where they'd much rather just simply pick their shot, where they don't want to put a machine on the market to a set of customers that aren't ready necessarily to buy it yet. Not when they definitely can have a hit with a super upgraded MacBook Air. Not when they can still have really, really good sales with the Mac Studio. They still got a lot of people lined up for money to spend on things they already have without trying to figure out who haven't we reached yet and does it make sense for us to tie up so many of our resources into doing a Mac Pro right now?
You also have hardware solutions that, you know, if Apple is going to release a headset in June, you may have had just a lot of resources pulled out of your Mac. There may be a lot of crossover between the Mac Pro group and the AR group or the device group as they start to finish that up. And it may have just been sucking all of the knowledge power into getting this other product out, if it actually gets released, which we don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't care, but that's why I query other people, especially like you, Alex. You're the person in the market that's aimed at. So if you don't care, then well, I can see.
I don't care. Like, yeah. I don't, like, I thought that I bought a, here, the only thing, the only regret I have is that if I'd known it was going to take this long, I was really excited about the Mac Pro. I bought a Mac Studio. I went ahead with the Max instead of the Ultra. I didn't put as much hard drive space in. Had I known that the Mac Pro was going to stretch out, I probably just would have put a lot more into my Mac Studio. And then I probably would have been like, okay. No, like, you know, and so that was the only reason.
Because even a Mac Pro, it wouldn't give you the one thing you really want, which is an NVIDIA, or at least some sort of discrete.
Well, for some of the stuff that I do, there's a lot of discrete things that are built around NVIDIA cards that, you know, Unreal performance and other things that we need for those things. And so I think that, you know, we want to have those cards, and we're not going to get those from Apple. And so when I buy a PC and I put an NVIDIA card in, it's a pretty specific thing.
Is it also the case that Apple really, the desktop market's just not important for Apple, that laptops?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it when they last did Mac sales figures, it was, what, 3/4 laptops, and it's probably more than that now. And so, yeah, the truth is, this is, and most of those are going to be iMacs, and then there's going to be Mac Mini and Mac Studio now. And the Mac Pro is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction, if you consider Apple's whole business, right? Yeah. And so it's not important in that way. It's important as a flagship. It's important for certain customers in certain industries, I think, although you can make the argument that a lot of them are pretty well served by the Mac Studio, and that Apple's whole Apple Silicon transition means that some stuff that they might want, they're just not going to get.
There is a bestseller, though, that they aren't updating, which is the iMac.
Right. Well, I mean, I think this goes to what you said about desktops, right? It feels to me like we're going to end in a cadence here where laptops are updated with every chip generation and desktops are updated with every other chip generation.
But that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean,
But I mean, if you're Apple and it's like less than a quarter of your sales, then your laptops are the priority.
Right.
And if they alternate too. So it's like we'll have the Mac Studio one time and then we'll have the Mac Pro the other time and we'll go back and forth between them. And then the iMac, I agree. I don't understand why they would be like, nah, we're not going to bother with an M2 iMac, because the iMac is still used in a lot of different places and they do make a lot of money on the iMac. So it's a little bit baffling. The Mac Pro, not so much, right? Like the Mac Pro is more about sending a message and showing what you're capable of. But they brought this on themselves by sort of like teasing, story for another day. What day is it, John Ternus? Tell us, what is that day? Yeah. When is it?
I have to think that John expected it to be sooner than 404 days.
Yeah, right? Totally.
He didn't mean, that's another day, 1,000 days from now. I don't think he meant that. So clearly, to me, that's a point evidence that they thought they were going to have something sooner. And then something didn't happen. I don't know what that is. Maybe it was financial. Maybe it was technical.
Yeah. And another question is, are they still trying to decide what defines a Mac Pro at this juncture? We've talked about this before, where a Mac Studio is so powerful for creatives right now that you're wondering what kind of people will definitely be holding on to their money for a Mac Pro right now. And so now the gulf between Mac Pro users and non-Mac Pro users has never been more distinct. You really are talking about people who are doing a lot of like number crunching, a lot of number modeling, like financial modeling. You're wondering, I have to wonder if they're trying to figure out if the high-end Mac Pro users are now interested in using Macs, not just for augmented reality, not just for high-end editing, not just for, again, weather modeling, financial modeling, all the research sort of stuff, but also are they developing language models with it? Are they developing AI models with it? And does that now mean that their whole concept of what they were been building for the past 2 or 3 years is now less relevant than it used to be? And so it behooves them to go back to the drawing board at least a little bit and make sure that they can make that case. If you're going to give us $10,000 for a workstation, this is competitive with a high end Windows machine that's got 4 GPUs in it to do all that heavy lifting.
All right, here's another data point. Somewhere between rumor and fact, there is a database of Macs that. The Find My Configuration files are coming out, and inside the Find My Configuration files, there are Macs that should not be in Find My because they're desktop. And a developer named Nicolas Alvarez noticed that this Find My has now 3 new, not before seen Mac models. And because this database is of desktops, the implication is there are 3 desktops coming. Mac. Now, maybe, Jason, you can decipher the numbering. Mac 14, 8, 13, and 14.
Yeah, the problem is that now they just say Mac. They used to say more about what Mac they were, and now they don't. In fact, there's some speculation that, you know, does it even mean MacBooks? And that they're just not calling them anything, just Mac now. By the way,
but it seems like
Mac,
it's not
Find My.
Yeah, you can do it. I know. I always thought that was weird. But this, I'm quoting 9to5 Mac here, which says only desktop Macs are listed in this file because they're the only ones not compatible with the Find My. Oh, it's the left behind feature.
Ah.
So if somebody steals your desktop, you can still find it. But the left, like when you leave.
Can't put it in.
I tell you, every single day on my trip. And I kept saying, I got to turn this off. It would say, you left your bag.
You left your iPad at the hotel. Oh, yeah, no.
Every single freaking day. But I know it was working, so that's good. So they don't put desktops in there for obvious reasons.
In that category.
Right? So
yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, what would they be? There are rumors that there is a Mac Pro. There are rumors that they're working on an iMac that's an M3, but who knows? I mean, the problem with that is, like, what does it mean? And the answer is they may just be putting it in there for future use, and,
right?
You know, testing.
It's not like an FCC database where you'd go, oh, okay, something exists and they're testing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mac Studio has not been upgraded since 2022. Typically, according to 9to5 Mac, the 14 Mac 14 designation is reserved for M2. Or possibly later chips. So these are presumably M2s. The Mac Mini is a Mac 14, 3. That's the M2 Mac Mini. The M2 Pro Mac Mini is 14, 12. So those would slot in nicely in those new three ones. Who the hell knows? I don't know if it means anything, right? And also when I left, the M3 was on the, you know, on the near horizon. Now it's not anymore, right? Everything's going to be M2 and shit. Yeah.
It feels like we reached the most obvious answer there, which was like, well, what are they going to do if they have the M3, but then they release the 15-inch MacBook Air with the M2? And the answer is, well, yeah, the 15-inch MacBook Air is going to come out and it's going to be an M2. And then when will the M3 Air come out? Well, later, probably this fall.
This fall.
And well, wait, oh my God, they'll have two models of Air and one's bigger than the other, but it has a different chip. It's like,
nope.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
I do think that at some point Apple has to kind of sync this up. Like it's really confusing. It's starting to get really confusing. I've got an M1 here, an M2 here, possibly an M3 there. And it starts to feel like the mid-90s. Like it's just
no,
like,
they'll get it. I think they'll get there. It's a stutter step because of it's new. It's for early days.
It is.
They'll get to a yearly cadence, right? At some point.
I mean, I just feel like you just want to say, here's a bunch of Mac. Here's a bunch of Mac. I mean, I just want them to get to some point as a user. I just want them to say, it's December. Here's all the desktop. Here's all the laptops. Like, here's how we split that chip up into different ways of doing it. And I just think it's a lot of, I mean, I think that the confusion does start to, like, when you're, am I waiting for this or am I waiting for that? And I think that there is, keeping that confusion keeps people buying year round. I understand that process. But at the same time, there's a little bit of, I'm just going to hang on because I find myself hanging on to computers a lot, like Macs, like, I don't know if I want to upgrade it because I just don't understand what they're doing. And so by not understanding it, I think it may be slowing down purchases as well.
Mm. I mean, it's possible. I think that some of this is that it's Apple Silicon and it's new and they're figuring it out. And then they had the pandemic and they had the factory shutdowns. And so they're trying to figure out like how to sync it all back up. I do agree in the long run, you know, you shouldn't have two modern MacBook Airs and then suddenly they have different processors in them. Ideally, you'd like to do a when the M3 rolls out, all the devices that are at the base M get the 3 and then we move on with our lives. But when it's a new product like the 15 Air, it's, you know, maybe it's out of step for a little while. I'd say the real complexity that we all have to deal with and confusion as buyers is the modern Tim Cook Apple style where they just keep old models around, right? I think the actual confusion is the M1 MacBook Air is also still around. And is it going to stay around? I'm not sure the M2 Air can be discounted. I think I would probably bet that when there's an M3 Air, the M2 Air goes away. And the M1 Air still sits there at $999. So that's where I think it gets the most confusing is it's not even the current models. It's the old models that are still kicking around in order to, you know, in order to hit a price point.
So June 5th, which is a Monday, thank you for making that a Monday so that we could talk about it Tuesday, is when WWDC kicks off. So we're, you know, 6 weeks away. I think it's very, I don't know. When also when I left, there was some thought maybe they're not going to release the VR, AR headset. But that seems to solidify that they're definitely going to release that.
Release is not the word, though, right? Yeah, like, announce. Since you, announce. It's very, very reveal. Announce and not release.
Okay.
Because the release is going to be much later in the year, and it sounds like that has slid a lot further back. Like, this is going to be an Apple Watch style. They'll introduce it to the world. It'll have its coming out party. And then, you know, this fall sometime, they'll do another event, maybe in the iPhone event, and say, oh, it's actually going to ship.
But that's kind of what WWDC is when you announce the new OSs. So they'll announce Mac OS 14. They'll announce iOS 17. They'll announce Reality OS. And oh, one more thing. Here's a new OS you can add to the bunch, and you might want to start developing it for, because we're going to have hardware for that in the fall. Something like that. No?
Yeah.
Well, they have, they'll have to have a prototype.
Maybe. I think they're going to show it. I think they're going to show the, I think they're going to show the headset. They're going to show how it fits in, how it fits into the model. They're going to talk about it. And then, but I, if they ship it before November, or at least before October, I'll be surprised. You know, like,
well, that's good.
You
know, it gives me time to save up.
Yeah, exactly. It does let them have developers come to Cupertino, to their nice new developer center. And, you know, it's just all the pressure gets released when you have the ability, when you've announced the product.
Because, I don't think anything's happening at the developer center. I think it's all happening in Steve Jobs' theater. I think it's all
no I'm saying after it's
after
announced,
that
they can spend the next 6 months with developers visiting them and doing actual development work on the hardware, because the cat's out of the bag. People don't have the hardware in their homes,
but they have simulators,
but they would be able to come to Cupertino and actually use a version of the hardware and do it like they did with the Apple Watch, and that is valuable. I mean,
they gotta have somewhere for Panzerino and Gruber and Stern to go to see the thing.
Sure, they'll have that too, but I mean, like, I remember visiting a friend at Apple Park at Infinite Loop, actually, after the Apple Watch was announced and not shipping, and he was wearing an Apple Watch, and there were people all around us wearing Apple Watches, and it's like the product wasn't out yet, but it's
so
like that wasn't the point was that the product had been announced, and that it will help them because they can actually talk about Reality OS and what it is to developers that week, instead of pretending it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll probably have a very, very large line of partners that they're going to line up of, like, this is what this group is going to do, and this is what that group's going to do, because the idea is to create safety for the developers of, like, we're not just putting this out here and hoping you develop for something. There's something to develop for. And here are, you know, here's how Amazon's using it, and Home Depot's using it, and, you know, whatever, IKEA is using it. And so there's a whole bunch of, like, these are a bunch of big companies that are going to make it nice and safe for you, that people are actually going to use this. And so I think that's part of that puzzle. And again, they can have simulators that are already, you know, that show the two eyes or whatever, on your in Xcode, so that you can start writing things and seeing kind of what it would look like, and probably a simulator on your phone that will let you, you know, do things that are closer to it. And then again, I think it'll still be only sold. I mean, it'll be sold at a price that the developers will want to buy first, and they may make you buy they're calling it quote unquote like Glass did, calling it a developer edition. And you have to pay the $100 to be a developer to buy it. But then anybody can just pay the $100.
Right.
It's $100 more.
If we all chip
in
$750, we could share one.
Yeah,
and share pink eye as well.
Yeah. Conjunctivitis, anybody?
But I mean, I bet that the people who buy it, it has to be linked to their own developer account. I bet that they're going to, Apple's going to make something in there so that you can't just simply resell it on eBay or resell it through any other sort of market.
Do you think my old Google Glass, you think they'll take it as trade in?
Well, it's one more Android device off the market. I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
They're still pretty salty.
So June 5th to June 9th, it'll be just like it was last year, which is basically a free online event. Some developers will be invited to Apple Park to watch the keynote and State of the Union.
I think it's all free now. Like, I don't think they're charging. They're inviting. Are they charging developers?
Used to be expensive.
No, it used to be $1,500 or $2,500.
No, you just have to be a member and then pay your own way to get to Cupertino. But the people who are invited to be on campus are just, they're not paying.
And the Swift Student Challenge will happen, and those students will be there. So, you know, be just like last year. Yeah, actually, I think they should do that forever now at this point. It's not about COVID anymore.
I think it's over. Well, and again, if you look at, like, we were talking about it in office hours, NVIDIA did it. Their last in-person before COVID had 8,000 participants. This last year, they had 250,000.
Yeah, we streamed it. We
totally virtual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're not going back.
No.
And Apple's,
why?
Yeah, Apple's exactly. Not going back. You know, and so the so I don't think that's going to happen. It's too and again, I think that, like, the sessions, especially as someone who's seen a lot of those sessions, you know, it's so much better to have pre-recorded where they, you know, it's all nice. It's nice they get to do it a couple times.
Yeah.
To make sure it's right. And putting developers who only do this once a year in front of 300 people and having them have to do it live was just a torture chamber, you know, and I think that it's so much more sane now. So, and it's better for the viewer because it looks better.
Yeah, and we'll all be watching with great interest. I mean, I don't, regardless of the ridiculous price and of the AR/VR headset, I think we're all very interested in the details of it. And it'll be, I don't know if we'll buy one, but it'll be very interesting to learn more about what Apple's thinking. The rumor from you'll buy one. Good. Thank you.
I'll buy one.
You saved me $750. Mark Gurman said that they're going to throw the kitchen sink at this thing. Because, like the Apple Watch when it came out, they don't know what it's for.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like more like the iPad though. The eye-opening part of this newsletter piece was that he expects the headset to be compatible with hundreds of thousands of iPad apps, quote unquote, with little or no modification, including most of, like, Apple's built-in iPad apps. And I find myself flip-flopping on how I react to that. If this headset's experience is such that, oh, it's perfectly relevant to take this app that was designed for a screen that we've had since 2006, 2007, how advanced is it really? But on the other hand, the iPad also got its foot in the door by saying, oh, and by the way, it also runs every single iPhone app that existed. If Apple is saying this as a way of, hey, we're not going to take $2,000 or $3,000 from you and give you something that only does FaceTime. You're at least going to be able to transition into using this thing. You'll be able to use this wonderful hand pointing gesture system. You'll be able to use this keyboard that works with eye glances and stuff like that with existing iPad apps to at least give you $600 worth of value, and then the rest of it is going to be when people start actually making actual augmented and virtual reality apps for it.
Well, I mean, Facebook spends a lot of time, and Oculus spends a lot of time building apps, but one of the most popular apps on Oculus is Netflix.
Right.
So the thing is having a portable large screen that you can sit in the airport or sit in a plane or sit where, you know, in a car if you want to, although that, by the way, makes you really sick if you try it. It's like the car moving and then having an action film is really hard to watch. So anyway, but if you do that, there's a lot of those games, whether you're playing Tetris or Kingdom Rush or checking things, it'd be really nice to have it on a big screen.
Sickest I ever got was riding a bus into San Francisco while playing Quake or Doom on a laptop. And I tell you, it was not good. So don't do this, kids. Try not to do this.
All I'm saying is that I'm hoping that whatever demo they give when they do show it off isn't just, hey, look, we can give you a virtual TV screen. And because that's easy. That's table stakes. That's $400 headset stuff. And I do think simple experiences like that are going to be very, very important for the overall experience. You shouldn't try to revolutionize us into 23rd century software. There are some basic things that also make such thing useful, but we're hoping that they make the emphatic point that there is something to virtual reality and our approach to virtual reality that is going to be productive and move the needle forward.
And I think that the thing that I'm really looking for, as having been doing lots and lots of demos with an Oculus headset, is what does the first 10 seconds look like when you put it on? Because the biggest problem you get into when you're trying to show someone something or put a headset on is you put it on, and if you don't know the little key code on the side of, I'm going to go up, down, and I'm tap, it is like this, you get lost in the system. And so, you know, is that going to be something that's easy? I put it on and it immediately knows what it's doing. Maybe I was on my iPhone and I had something in it just automatically on my iPhone. When I put it on, it knows where it's going to be and it's going to give me what I need. And so that first 10 seconds, I think, is really important. I do think that the AR nature of it, like, am I going to walk into my living room, be able to put these on and view what all the IKEA furniture would look like, and more importantly, be able to build it. But with less swear words, just like now with less swear words. But those are be the kind of things that'd be really interesting to see, you know, what that looks like. Yeah. And so. Yeah,
for the record, those of us who are old enough to remember, like, the advent of the home computer, they're on the list of things you can to justify this $1,000 gizmo that plugs into your TV, says, like, and you can balance your checkbook with it. And to me, I've always thought that the same thing for VR is like, and you can shop and see what things look like. I mean, it's an obvious application, but it's the sort of thing that you come up with before you actually have this in your house, like 24/7. I mean, this is going to be a great year because we're going to see. It's the whole idea of people screwing around with it, maybe 1,000, then 5,000, then 50,000 people messing around with this and coming up with ideas that Apple is going to say, wow, that is one of the most brilliant things ever. We're going to put your software company out of business by putting that into the next version of our software. Congratulations, though. Thank you.
Or Apple acquires companies from time to time, and we have chosen to acquire you now, and yeah, you work for us. Congratulations, you're fired. But we have your intellectual property. Yeah, I mean, that gets back to what we have been saying the last few weeks about shipping the product. Like, they look, iPad apps, you're right, Andy, they're table stakes, but they still will be useful. And it's good. It's going to be good to have them. And then you choose which apps to spend your effort on if you're Apple to make them VR-y. And then you see what happens, right? And like, I really do think it's going to be exactly what you described, which is, say, this app has turned out to be very successful. It would be a shame if something happened to it.
Well, and again, I think that the other thing is to look at how Apple's existing apps also integrate with the headset. So for instance, at NAB last week, one of the big things that was bouncing around was that Resolve had a huge update. You know, Blackmagic's DaVinci Resolve had a huge update. Premiere had a huge update. And nobody was there from Apple, like, talking about Final Cut. And a lot of people, now normally their rev cycle is in October, but we didn't see much in October either. So there was a whole lot of like, what is going on? And there's two theories that are floating about. One is that, you know, Apple is really focusing more towards social. And the other one is that Apple is really focusing more towards AR. We've got 3D tools that are built into Motion and Final Cut. We got 360 tools that were built into those two apps. Are they pushing and getting ready to, you know, be able to develop content, you know, for those, which would take Final Cut from and Motion from a very strong video editing app, which I use a lot. And a 3D and a compositing app to the only video, like the only ones that are really built for using the new headset. So it's a really interesting puzzle that a lot of people are trying to figure out where Apple's going with that. Also though, but how do they integrate with the work stuff? Like, so am I going to be able to send you a keynote presentation that happens to work inside of your headset and with things popping out and so on and so forth? So a lot of those things we're waiting to see, but no one knows until potentially June, maybe not until the fall.
It's going to be exciting to see if they actually do make the case that this is going to be just like the iPad is an alternative to a notebook for not all productivity stuff that you would do with a laptop or desktop, but at least for many of them. It would be interesting if they make the case that these boring things that constitute 70% of how you spend all your day getting work done, you can at least do some of it on this headset. You can actually get through your email with it. You actually can put together a presentation with it, not just obvious VR things like, hey, you can have a meeting with this thing. It's going to be interesting to see if those rumored dual 8K displays are up to the challenge of giving you a virtual 27-inch screen and a keyboard experience that you can actually be transacting information through.
All right, let me take a break because there is actually quite a bit more to talk to, but this would be a nice place to pause. We look forward to WWDC. We're going to cover it, obviously, June 5th. Are you going, Jason? Do you get an invite to that or no?
It traditionally, I have gotten a press invite, so nice. Hopefully that will happen this year.
I hope you're there. That would be very nice. And if you are, we will talk to you the following day because we will do a show on June 6th. So we're, you know, that's what, 6 weeks away from That means, well, actually, the way I think of it, 6 more weeks of speculation on Mac Break Weekly, 5. And then we can actually talk about something. But there are some other big stories, and we're going to get to those in just a second. As you know, I have been gone for 3 weeks and in a different time zone, actually 3 different time zones, which was, you know, a little hard on the body. I'm a little jet lagged, but I have to say I'm feeling better when I got home because my AG1 came. This episode of Mac Break Weekly brought to you by AG1 from Athletic Greens. I think you probably all know about Athletic Greens. They've been around for 10 years. As soon as I mentioned this, Aunt Pruitt said, oh, yeah, I've been using that for years. I mean, a lot of athletes, a lot of people who just want to stay in better health have been using AG1 for a long time. I, on the other hand, have been taking 18 different horse pills every morning to start my day. I'm really glad when I got my pack of AG1 from Athletic Greens so that one daily drink, nutritional drink, gave me everything I need. It's the best all-in-one solution for daily nutrition. The foundation of daily health. It saves you time. It saves you confusion. It saves you money. Each serving is less than $3 a day. I spend a lot more than that on all those silly supplements I take. Plus, you're going to get powerful long-term results. And you know what? One of the reasons I've been avoiding stuff like this, because the other ones don't taste so good. This one tastes delicious. I actually enjoy drinking. AG1 makes it easier for you to take the highest quality supplements, improve your digestion, support your sleep. And if you're suffering from jet lag like I am, it's the best bang for your buck. I got that AG1 starter kit here. It says you're going to need a smaller cabinet, which I guess is true. You should see the size of my vitamin cabinet. And in here, I've got the AG1. I've got some storage, but I've also got my AG1 shaker. So let me just show you what I do every morning now. You get the AG1 packets here. This is everything you need. 12 grams gives you 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. Now, the good thing about this, the thing that makes me feel good about it, quality, and I've learned this, quality of supplements can really vary. You can buy supplements that aren't very well made, don't have what they say they do. You can trust AG1. These are made in New Zealand from very high quality ingredients. Let me show you. I'm going to dump the powder into the shaker. This is what you do every morning. I guess you could do it at night. It's seamless. It's an easy habit, and that's the point. It's a daily habit. With one scoop, and they have, by the way, and you probably would want to do this, get the jar, get the scoop instead, but this is for the show. This is easy. I'm going to shake it up, get all your vitamins, your minerals. You get pre and probiotics, which is one of the reasons it's so good for your digestion. I didn't do a very good job of this. I would do this over the sink normally. This is cold water. You don't have to use hot water or anything like that. It mixes up very easily, and then it tastes amazing. How can I describe that? It's refreshing. It's, you want to try this, John? No. No, I tested for COVID before I came in. No, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to. That's not hygienic, is it? That's a great way to start the day. AG1 from Athletic Greens. And I will give you all the good news. Athletic Greens is a climate neutral certified company. They believe good nutrition should be available to all. For every purchase, they donate to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need so you can feel good about it. If you're looking for a simpler, cost-effective supplement routine, get rid of all those pills and that giant cupboard and save some money, too, with AG1 from Athletic Greens. In fact, you can get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D. You need that, as we know. Little sunshine in a packet, and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. This is the way to go. So when you get the pack, you'll get that canister that's see, you don't have to, and you get the Athletic Greens like this. That's a 1-month supply. You put in the canister, it's got a little scoop, makes it very easy. But I like these packets for traveling. This was great. In past trips, I've put together a rather elaborate combination of pills for morning and night. This was so much easier. AG1 from Athletic Greens. Thank you, Athletic Greens, for your support. of Mac Break Weekly, and I invite you all to give it a try. It's really good. athleticgreens.com/MacBreak. Lisa got me to, a couple of years ago, try something else, and I said, I'm not going to drink that every day. This I actually look forward to. It tastes fantastic. I'm going to put away the coffee now, John. AG1 every morning, baby. Aunt Pruitt said it's Aunt Pruitt certified. All right. I did another good thing while I was on the trip. I put all my money in Apple Savings. Then Lisa said, did you check what the rates were with other companies? I said, what? Oh, I thought 4.15%. I thought, well, that's a lot. Because I'll tell you why I thought that's a lot. My bank and a few other banks, including Bank of America, when you put your money into a savings account, give you a whopping 0.01% APY, which is ridiculous. you might as well just, you know, put it under your mattress. So I was very pleased. Plus, I didn't even know this because you get daily cash back from Apple. I already had a couple of $1,000 just sitting there. So it was fairly easy, unlike many other savings accounts. For some reason, you have to fill out you have to do a credit application, which is odd. Here's a comparison head-to-head with Apple Insider. And they did, thank you, they did a very nice thing. They compared it to other banks. And yes, there are a few banks, UFB, Vio Bank, Citizens Bank, that have a higher rate, but it's among the highest rates out there. They do max out at $250,000, which we have learned is the FDIC limit. So that's probably a good thing. You don't have to worry about that. And it's Goldman Sachs doing it, by the way. So what do we think? Apple Savings? Is anybody else in the Apple Savings game?
I haven't done it, although I've been meaning to try it out.
It was fast.
Better. You've got to be an Apple Card member, and I think it's better than Apple Cash. I think what I said last week is Apple Cash is this phantom zone of money, like your PayPal balance, where it's sort of like they have your money and you get nothing from it. And I like the idea that Apple's saying, okay, how about you get something from it? How about you make interest on what you leave in your balance instead of it just sitting there?
I had my balance is now zero. I had $1,749.65 in there because I, bought stuff. So that's good to know that that's going to earn a little bit of interest. And I think you can make it automatically transfer. I think it's doing that, the daily cash. Right into that.
Yeah, that's the idea, is that they automatically put that in there.
Yeah, and I think that the ones that have a higher rate have to be as convenient.
this is pretty darn convenient. And they say, I haven't tried it yet, but I can easily get the money. I can instantly get the money out of the savings, transfer it to your bank.
That's what people are saying is the danger, is being able to instantly pull money out of
your
savings.
Yes.
so people are, so that's the one, that's the knock on it really, is that it's too easy to take money out of your savings if you're not disciplined. There's no bump there at all. But at the same time, I do think that Apple is going to keep on going down this, as we've talked about before.
You wanted them to become a bank, yeah.
I didn't say I wanted to. I just could see the trajectory. As soon as they announced the card, I was like, oh, I can see this. I can see where they're going to go with this. And so they're, it's not so much a want or a need or anything else. I'm fine with what I have, but the, which is not, I have no idea. My wife manages that. I don't know where any of the money goes. So I have no idea how that works. But I can say that I just think that Apple will continue to, they don't have to take on everything to be in a bank. They can keep on just, carving off little bits of this and getting closer and closer. What they have that most banks don't have is a huge business that requires credit. So they have a huge, they can literally, they're capable of building a closed system, which is a very interesting puzzle, because it potentially means that they could be making, they could be paying higher interest rates than most banks if most of the loans are going to people buying products from them.
I think it's trouble for traditional banks. When's the last time you went into a bank?
Well, there's not a lot of goodwill with most.
No, that's the other thing.
You know, like, so yeah. The thing is that, you know, there's like
0.01% you're giving me for my money. 0.01%.
You know, like, there's not a lot of people that go, oh, I love my bank. You know, there's some credit unions that are pretty, you know, that are pretty good. But there's not a lot of people that look at their banks and go, oh, that's the best thing ever.
Well, I think there's some nervousness too after the failure of Silicon Valley Bank that people are kind of going,
Yeah.
You don't need a building with columns in front. There's several banks, as you know, Alex, in downtown Petaluma. They used to be banks. Yeah. They're built in the 1900s that are edifices.
Now an eye care.
To give you
eye care now.
To give you the sense that, oh, my money is safe. That's, look at the size of that safe, and it's got columns in a row. You know, I mean, it's just, it looks like something out of ancient Rome. They're now all antique stores.
They were selling seeds for a while, and that one.
There was a seed bank. They called it the seed bank. That one's still vacant. The one you were talking about downtown, where it used to be an antique store, they turned into like a mall. And then they were going to have a nightclub in the safe, because it's a giant walk-in safe in the back. They're very cool looking. But nobody
in my hometown, the old bank got turned into a candy store, which I kind of like.
That's nice.
Like, you can go into the vault and buy candy.
Candy? Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Sweet. Yeah.
Mostly what we do now can be done online. And frankly, I've had an online only bank, USAA, for more than a decade. And now the one thing is cash, right? And some of these, USAA is one, will let me use any ATM and reimburse ATM fees. So any ATM in the world is my ATM. So that was very convenient. That's one thing missing from Apple's offering, obviously. It's a little hard to get that cash out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The danger to banks isn't necessarily, I don't think Apple wants to put any bank out of business. I think what they want to do is they want to partner with financial institutions and banks such as Goldman Sachs to do all the twitchy stuff, such as keeping in line with all the regulations locally and nationally and internationally, all the boring stuff. When it comes to, though, signing up new people to your card, Apple wants to do that. When it comes to the front of the user interface being, all these people who are Goldman Sachs customers, they don't feel like Goldman Sachs customers.
No.
They feel like they're Apple customers.
I would never be a Goldman Sachs customer, except I am. But I don't.
And the idea that with these savings accounts, so to speak, it's not so much an account so much as giving you an incentive to keep money parked in your Apple account. So you can have transactions that never actually deal with transactions through banks at all. Like you can do Apple Pay at a counter that simply dips into money that you've accrued by either just putting refilling your card, accessing credit that you got through Apple's new credit system, or just simply it's all the sexy stuff that you make money on that people are going to be attached to. Is stuff that Apple is going to be putting their hooks on, and the banks are going to become just the plumbers of the operation. And because Apple is Apple, there's a great article in Financial Times that talked about how thoroughly Apple was able to not necessarily beat up Goldman Sachs, but basically say, yes, you're telling me that for us to say that the Apple card is the most secure card in the world would be illegal. We don't think so. So we want you to do your little whatever you need to do so that we can actually use that slogan. And it was only at the very, very last hour, according to this Financial Times article, that they actually caved. This is exactly how Apple beat up AT&T when they were launching their very first iPhone. And now look what they did to the phone industry.
Yeah, and I think that, and it's not just that Apple is Apple, but banks are banks, you know. And banks, are, you know, the user interface for banks in general is not great, you know. And it's just it's a little bit of a pain in the neck, and everything's a little bit of like quirky and everything else. And I think Apple's pretty good at ironing those things out. And I think that's going to be the thing that it's going to be very hard for banks. And again, Apple doesn't, you know, I think Apple's also just trying to reduce the friction of transactions. You know, I think that you know, reduce the friction of buying things from them. You know, and so by incorporating all those pieces together, it is making all of that easier. And that may affect a lot of things all the way up to the App Store at some point, where all of those things are all kind of tied together. And potentially it means that Apple's able to shave Apple just shaving off 1% or 2% of the cost of transactions across all of the App Store or all of their things is not a trivial amount of money. It's the amount of money that people could raise, you know, raise funds on, do a startup on. So them just making it a little bit more efficient is enough to do this.
If there's one thing that makes Rupert Murdoch madder than spending $878 million to settle the Dominion lawsuit, it's big tech, because he's convinced big tech has put his newspapers in a world of hurt. So I'm always suspicious when the Journal has a story about big tech. But I did kind of have some sympathy when I saw this one. When Apple comes calling, it's the kiss of death. Aspiring partners accuse tech giant of copying their ideas. Aaron Tillen wrote this. You might have already. Did you already talk about it? No, this came out on the 20th. No. So it's been since last week. So this is Sherlocking. We've talked about this before. And frankly, this was the MO for years of Microsoft. What do they
it's
call
the
it?
MO of every big company.
Every like, big like, company, right? Embrace like, and
every
devour.
Big company comes to you. This is why venture capitalists ask you, what do you have that is, protected? What are your patents for? Where's your IP? Because if you don't have any IP, a big company comes to talk to you and they go, well, you know, that, you know, what are you offering us? And the only thing that really protects a small company is their IP, you know, from a big company. You know, there can be other structural things that give them an advantage, but for the most part, it's the patents that they sit on top of. And so usually when they're buying a company, they want patents, you know, like they want to see patents that they can't get on their own. But otherwise, you know, why, you know, there's not a lot of good reason for them to
well, the premise of this isn't merely that they buy the company, this that they say, yeah, oh, we're very interested, come bring us everything, we're going to do due diligence. Microsoft used to do this, Google used to do this, Amazon is known for doing this. They take a look at the product, they say, oh, thank you, I guess we're not going to buy it. And then later they either make it or steal employees from the old company.
I will say what's usually left out is there is a little bit of a dance there where they say, how much do you want for it? And you have to pick a good price. Like I had a big company come to one of my former companies and said, hey, we're really interested in something that you have there. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I showed them how it worked and they asked how much. And I said, this is how much you can buy it for. This is how much you can use it for. And they didn't want to buy it. They just wanted to use it, you know, for something that they were doing. And and we negotiated a price, and I sold them the use of it for it, because I knew that if I didn't sell them it, you know, the issue is, as a small company, what I knew was it has to be easier to buy the service from me than it is to make it. So I just knew how much effort it was going to take. Where I set the number was slightly below what it would take to do it themselves, or really half of what I thought it would take to do it themselves. And the goal was to keep it under that radar. And I, you know, walked away with a pretty good check. I kept my company going for quite some time. But that dance, you're dancing, you know, you're like a little bear dancing with a really big bear, and you just have to make
it's a bear hug. Yeah.
You know, and so I think that there's usually they're not having that conversation and not talking about money. They're just trying to figure out, is it worth buying? You know, are you going to give them a number that's lower than what it would take for them to develop themselves? And you just have to know where you are in the food chain.
Well, and the Journal also asserts that, and AliveCor would be an example of this, that Apple not only will take the technology and use it, but then sue you after the fact for daring to have the technology. Apple says it doesn't. We don't steal technology. We respect the intellectual property of other companies. We've paid for 25,000 licenses, more than 25,000 licenses over the years. So is this a hit piece from the Wall Street Journal, or is it a legitimate complaint? And as you said, I mean, this is something big companies have done. Microsoft was famous for doing this.
And also there's a reason why you can't get Google Cast support on Sonos wireless speakers, because Sonos and Google are suing each other because Sonos says that they did basically the same thing that's been outlined in this Wall Street Journal article about health companies interacting with Apple, that we showed you they had lots of meetings with Google's about their wireless speaker technology, and then soon enough Google come up with their own solution instead of supporting Sonos, and there's now there's a whole bunch of lawsuits about it. I wouldn't call it a hit piece because they come up with like three different examples that doesn't necessarily say that, oh, Apple, they're a bunch of evil mustache twirling jerks. More like, if it's even at best, you can say that this is a huge company, like all huge companies, that will definitely negotiate in their best interest. I mean, all of the examples they're giving are related to the Apple Watch. And there's a company called Masimo that did blood oxygen measurement devices that work very, very closely with Apple, and said, oh, we want to, Apple having meeting with them saying, hey, we want to figure out, let's get together and see how we can integrate your technologies into this, that, and the other. And then after like 3 months of essentially like showing off everything that they had to Apple, they got the chief medical officer saying, hey, I'm quitting the company. I'm joining Apple right now. Integrated strikingly similar features and technologies into the Apple Watch, and then started suing Masimo to invalidate all of their patents so that they couldn't necessarily defend themselves. And as I said, it's I don't think that it's a mustache twirling operation from Apple, but it shows how large companies interact with smaller companies, and that Apple is no different than anybody else.
And well, and the next day, Aaron published another article in the Wall Street Journal saying Apple is going to Sherlock day one, which I'm a little miffed about because I love day one. On the other hand, Apple says this is part of our health initiative, is the idea that it's good for you to journal daily. So they're going to add, according to this, and again, it's only a rumor, Apple hasn't said anything, iPhone journaling app. I used day one. I used it on the trip, and it was so great because it will suck in your location, the weather where you are. And then I had put pictures in it, and I can print a book and stuff. I love day one. I've been a premium subscriber for more than I think since it started, forever.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Sherlocking. Sherlocking very rarely kills products, right? Because when Apple does a version of it, you know, if Apple does a journaling app, it's going to be a basic journaling app. It's not going to have most of the features of day one. It's going to be pretty basic, and they're going to do it because they feel like it enriches their platform. And also they have, and I think this is an interesting thing to have a conversation about at some point, is they also, Apple has access to data that they wouldn't necessarily want to share with a third party app, but that they could have on your device and then allow you to insert, like they know where you've been and all of that. Now, the right way to do it is to do your journaling app and have it use a new API that day one can also use. But in general, Apple is not ever interested in making an app with the level of functionality that a third party app has. A third party app that is no better than a generic, like a notes app that's no better than Apple's notes app. Well, that product is probably doomed. But the fact is, the other notes apps are way beyond the basic stuff that Apple puts in there. And I would say, in general, this, the Wall Street Journal story, you know, it is true. Any big company that's scrutinizing you, it's like the eye of Sauron has come upon you, right? It is, and it's not, well, Apple's here, they're going to rifle through your couch cushions and take all your stuff and hire away all your people. It's going to be, a big company is interested in what I'm doing. And there are only a few ways that can go, because they're either going to decide to buy you, or they're going to decide that it's important enough that they're going to do it anyway, or they're going to pass on and then you're not going to have to deal with them anymore. And that everything else comes from that. So, like, you know, I don't think you could portray this as a story of like, oh, Apple's just searching for ideas to steal. I don't think it's that. I think it's more like Apple knows that they need new feature for the Apple Watch, and they talk to a company and say, should we acquire them? And then they look and they go, well, what are their patents? They're not great. And what's their asking price? You know, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? And then you talk about their people, and it's like, in California, non-competes aren't enforceable, and people should be able to work where they want. And so if Apple looks at your company and says your patents aren't great, your people seem interesting, we think this needs to be not just an accessory, but fundamentally part of our platform, and then you hire away that person and you start building, and then maybe there are lawsuits. Like, I'm sympathetic to anybody who has the eye of Sauron fall upon them, but also I understand that in the history of Sherlocking, so much of it is like the question of, well, is Apple supposed to never do this ever because there's an app somewhere out there? Because the fact is, Apple putting it in the system means that vastly more people will use it than would ever go download that third-party app. Plus, I'm telling you, Sherlocking doesn't kill apps. It other than apps that are so much the baseline, that because Apple's apps are never going to match up in all those edge cases. They're like pop hits. They're meant to be for the, you know, the 90% of features that 90% of feature of users will use. Not like any good third party app is going to be better than the stock app, because the stock app's not meant to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Apple on a very real level is another developer that's contributing to the platform, and you can't tell them that this is a really having some sort of a journaling feature is something that I'm betting that a lot of their advisors, internal and external, have been saying that just the idea of at the end of the day, at a fixed time at the end of the day, just give the people a series of emojis saying how do you feel, how is your wakefulness, how is your energy level today, how is your this, how is your that, just by touching just simple emojis on there. It wouldn't be something, you can't simply say that just because Day One has a massive app that does comprehensive journaling for any reason that you might want to maintain a daily journal, that's no reason for Apple not to participate in that market. And just as the example of Notes apps is a really good example to use, because you know that Apple's not going to give you a multi-platform answer to this, whereas Day One, the reason why I pay for Day One is that it is multi-platform. I can use it on pretty much any device that I use. It's just that as part of this conversation, sometimes though, I wonder if Apple couldn't do better by its users by saying, you know what, we're not going to put every single feature packed into Mac OS, into iPhone OS, into Watch OS. We think that journaling is a really, really good feature, but we don't want to increase the load that's on this device. We don't want to keep adding features, because adding features is what causes a 3-year-old watch to suddenly feel like a 7-year-old watch, because you're putting so much more processing demands on the damn thing. And if Apple were to say, you know what, we're not going to necessarily bless one of these apps, but if we decide that a journaling feature is a really important thing, As Jason said, we're going to create an API so that you can feed information from your journaling app into the health app in a way that is secure and respectful of people's privacy, but still delivers that benefit of a daily check-in. And did you eat okay? Did you sleep okay? Do you feel like you were attentive today? How was your depression today? How was your mood today? Did you drink today? Did you engage in other bad habits that you don't want to, you're trying to limit? You could see that every time there's a new feature for a Notes app, it's like, okay, but why didn't you just keep it really, really simple and make it so that this has no overhead? This doesn't, for people who don't use the Notes app very much, it's not going to cause a drain on my resources. So there's a long discussion we have, but I'm sure that it's okay for Apple to put features into their own devices and let other people have to deal with it.
And I think that a lot of times for people who are passionate about something like the Day One, is they're going to keep on using what they're using, you know, and they're going to keep on going down that path. For people like me, I don't know if I'll journal or not, but like with Notes, like I know there's a lot of things that have more features than Notes, but I know I've been using Notes for a long time and I'm very attached to it. And there's a couple features that I keep on asking for, you know, just being able to draw over top of text would be great. But I think that as a user, I do want to see more features there, because I use it every day, all day. Like Notes is opened all the time on my computers. And I'm constantly keeping track of everything. And sometimes they're ephemeral and sometimes they're permanent. And a lot of times they stay permanent, even though they're meant to be ephemeral, which turns out to be super useful. So I think that Apple adding these, I mean, that's part of why Apple users like it, is because we're getting, you know, we get these new little apps that are building. I think Apple's telling a story of health and efficiency and productivity that they just are going to keep on adding. And I think that as a smaller company, you have to, every time someone, you know, comes into the room, you have to know where you stand and what do you have? Yeah. What's the angle? Like, what's your angle? Because I mean, I've had lots of small companies, and you don't, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, we've had stuff where we work with a company, we build entire feature sets around their product so not to go head to head with it, because going head to head with it would either would most likely have them turn it on theirs, you know? So like we just build, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that we'll build around it so that we can develop everything else we need. And then when we stop working for them, we add the other piece in. Like, we just go, okay, now we'll add this in, but we're not going to necessarily expose it to those companies. And that hasn't been Apple. It's been other big companies, but they've all been really big companies. Yeah. And so I think you have to be aware of that. And it's the nature of, if you don't want to be in that position, you got to grow out of it. You got to grow to a size where you're big enough to fight the bear. But if you're not big enough to fight the bear, then don't fight the bear. Like, and it is nature. Like, saying that it's not fair is kind of like saying it's not fair that the bear eats the fish.
Right.
The fish are like, this is fair. It's kind of like, well, it's a bear.
At the end of the day, we're just going to hope and pray that a company big enough to turn our lights out never decides to compete with us. That's not a business plan.
Yeah.
If that isn't your business plan, you might want to address that.
Yeah, hope is not a strategy. You know, and you're just like, you know, and you just have to, you know. Usually, if you go into a bit, you know, if you go into a startup process, I'm in a startup process right now, so I'm like doing presentations. One of the first questions is how are you going to manage competition? What if this big company does this? What if this big company does that? And you have to have good answers, at least good ideas for that process.
Well. Good. I don't want day one to go out of business. I really like day one. You use it, Andy. Does anybody else use it? No, just me and Andy. But look at this. This is
as someone who grew up in politics, you're like no.
Oh no, they have encryption. Oh no, they have end-to-end encryption.
Even with encryption, it's like
they have end-to-end encryption. So actually, that turns off some features. Because with end-to-end encryption, you can't, you know, there's some things you can't do. But I have to say, and yeah, you're right. You probably wouldn't put your deepest, darkest feelings into this. But it's great for like a travel diary. I'm able to put in.
As you've said a couple of times, your family owns a golf course. And you know what? A lot of problems get solved in that golf course, if you know what I mean, at 2 a.m. with a backhoe.
Every once in a while, we have to dredge the pond. Yeah, exactly. So,
it's kind of the Sopranos meets the ranchers called Yellowstone. I don't know if guys have seen it. But whenever there's a problem and they want to get rid of somebody, Kevin Costner says, take them to the train station, which it turns out is just over the border into Wyoming. And there's a big tip. Somehow there's a county that has no police jurisdiction and there's a big cliff and that's the train station. So there, you don't want to have.
I just imagine like Alex saying to his dad, yeah, I'm going to go, hit the back nine at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And his dad just says, just replace your divot.
If you know what I mean. I have to say, all the pictures that I end up putting in my day one journal, you know, this was a conundrum as I was leaving. I thought, do I want to bring a camera system? You know, I have a very expensive, fancy camera system with Sony and Leica and all that. And I decided I'm going to just do it. Let me try this with just my iPhone.
Yeah.
And iPhone 14 Pro Max. And then I also brought an Insta360 camera, which I used sparingly. But there were a few places where I was glad to have it. But honestly, I don't know if I'll ever bring a fancy camera anywhere ever again. It was just easy. And this is one example where day one, because it will pull right from Apple Photos, it couldn't have been easier to create all of this.
Yeah, the thing that clicked for day one for me was when I realized that there are a lot of things I'd love to post to Twitter, or a lot of ideas and things and things that come into my head and things I'm experiencing, but like, oh no, that's too personal, that's too private.
Right.
And for me, my day one journal is like a blog to my
blog. Exactly. You're tempted to tweet it, and many people do. And Elon, you probably should stop. But having a place that you can get that out of your system that isn't fully public, I think is great. Day one's really good for that. Anyway, thank you, day one. And actually, there was a good piece on Six Colors. Joe Rosenstiel wrote this. Have you considered using a camera?
Yeah, that was a member piece that that Joe wrote. And yeah, he was like, why don't you go out? And it's not, you should use a camera instead of your phone. It's not that. It's, why don't you go out for a walk with a camera and your phone and take some pictures and observe how they're different. Get out an old point and shoot or a compact camera, something with an SD card in it, and see the difference, because you'll see the things they do well and the things your phone does well.
Right.
And you end up in a place where you're like, you know, just be aware of the difference, and you may appreciate your phone camera a lot more. You may also appreciate when that other camera that's in the drawer might be appropriate. And I really enjoyed that. I just was in New Zealand for a couple of weeks and didn't take a camera with me.
Interesting.
And
yeah.
I think I've reached the point now where I feel like taking a standalone camera is something you do if you really enjoy shooting pictures.
Right.
But if what you want to do is capture memories of your trip, I don't think you need to, right? You don't need to do it. You just bring your phone. But if you want to take pictures and like, won't it be fun to take pictures of the beautiful scenery where I'm going, then you bring a camera, and that it's back to being a hobby.
I was backstopped a little bit because Lisa did bring her OM-1. So she had a good camera with a nice zoom. And that's the one thing I really, you know, the ability to, you're in Gaudi's Sagrada Familia Cathedral or somewhere, and you want to see a detail on a cherub that's 100 feet up.
Yeah.
She could get that. And I really couldn't. On the other hand, I have brought cameras in the past and spent a lot of times doing, you know, artistic photography and missing stuff and not really having a good record of the trip. This is a picture I took with my iPhone in the Monaco Harbor. And I think you can't really tell on the stream, but it's certainly good enough to print. And I don't, you know, I don't feel like there weren't many shots I missed, but occasionally Lisa would take a shot and I would say, oh, I want that one. Let me see. Oh, I know where a good one was, and I don't know if it's in here or not, but she took a close up in Sagrada Familia. Exactly. Now, by the way, you might say, oh, that's clearly a DSLR. No, that's portrait mode on an iPhone. I was very happy with the shot. I think these are all iPhone shots, actually, come to think of it.
Yeah. Now that so many, not even the top tier cameras have really good telephoto, actual separate telephoto.
Yeah, I brought a Samsung Ultra U23, but I didn't even need that so much, you know. I mean, it has pretty good zoom. This is Lisa's good camera. So there is a little more detail. It's a little better, but you know,
it definitely comes down to, like, I am a photography hobbyist. I love I love having that camera slung around my shoulder and my hip. I love taking a walk in an unfamiliar city and looking for, I know that there's a picture here somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got to go find it.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun. But when I'm out with people, with friends, I leave it at home. At best, I take my little pocket camera with me because I know that I'm going to, my camera roll in Lightroom and in Apple Photos and Google Photos, there is like, if it was a day I had just my phone camera, it's like, okay, snapshot, really, ooh, nice picture, ooh, nice picture, nice picture. If I had my real camera, it will be like, ooh, the sunlight on the Empire State Building is absolutely perfect. It's shading some of it, and I know I want to frame it correctly, and there will be 500 pictures of different angles and different croppings and different things framing it, and so much so that I'd never actually take some mistake to get around to editing it, because I have to fix which of these 500 is the decisive moment. Whereas with a picture, you take it, you enjoy it, you move on.
Well, and it does the GPS, so you know the location. It has
it ends up in iPhoto. I mean, like it, or in photos. You know, the problem for me is that also it's like, oh, I took that with that camera. Now I have to figure out when I'm going to import it into the.
Yes.
You know, does it have any data? And does it? You know, like I have all these old photos that I'm slowly bringing in. You know, I don't have them all in iPhoto just because I'm going to make the library really big. And I'm trying to figure out where to do those. I'm like, oh, I know there's a photo of that, but I'm like, oh, I took that with an SLR, so that's going to take, you know, time. You know, like oh, that's going to be ugly.
It doesn't have the metadata.
The culture also is that, you know, my kids, like, they relate to the camera completely differently, because to them all they know is the phone camera. And like my daughter, like, this is a picture we were having breakfast in Berkeley, and I took, you know, she's like, here, give me the photo, give me the camera. So this is her asking for the camera, and then she grabs it, and in 1 second she shoots that.
Oh, love that, because she's a native. She knows, and then, right?
And then she puts it back. And then she just hands it back to me. But literally, she just grabbed it, took the picture, and then handed it back to me. Like, that was the picture she wanted to take. And there's there's so many like known, quote unquote, known photos that they just know how to do that.
Right.
That is taking nothing that you would do with an SLR. It's a completely
couldn't do that easily with an SLR. It's hard to describe that, but it's she's using the wide angle and it's above her and her
eyes hysterical. Really big and
yeah.
super wide. Yeah.
Yeah.
To say nothing of how conversant they are in video.
Yeah.
It's like whenever you see me post a video to something, it's not because I'm pivoting to video. It's because I'm still trying to crack that myself and trying to figure out how do I tell a story efficiently through video and how do I do a workflow mm-hmm. so that it doesn't take 4 days and wind up me thinking, why am I bothering with any of this? Whereas this generation that grew up with a decent camera and a decent video camera in their pocket with software for simple, like nonlinear editing, they are so expressive with it. There's so many YouTube channels that and TikToks that I subscribe to just because, my God, these teenagers and people in their early to mid 20s, they are such good video storytellers. There's such like even I don't care. I really don't care about the sewing project that they're showing off. It's like they got their boy. They got the master. They got the tight shot. They got the B roll. They know right. when to. They know how to break up like a long monologue with varying like moving the camera in and out every once in a while. I am so in awe of them. And again, this is the sort of thing that if you grow up in a world with ChatGPT, you will learn how to write in a way that anybody who learned how to write without ChatGPT will never be able to comprehend. Yeah. So I hope to see them just as befuddled in 10 years as I am with great videographers.
And by the way, like one of the things my kids have gotten a lot out of is they go to the Apple store. When they go to LA and visit their grandparents, I guess one of the models that their grandmother has is to take them to the Apple store and she hangs out and they take classes there. And the Apple store classes are really good. Like they are free in the Apple store and they, you know, come out of it knowing a lot about how to take more advantage of their iPads or their phones or whatever. So if you're listening, you should always look at what those Apple classes are because they're for kids, especially. I mean, I feel like I need to go there to learn because my daughter was like, she was like playing GarageBand and I listened to the song and I was like, who made that song? She's like, I did. I put this all together in GarageBand. And so,
100%, because this isn't just, oh, well, there was a memo from corporate saying that, hey, make sure you do an iMovie seminar. And then person at the store who knows iMovie is going to do like a put together a class. It's like, this is really expensively produced educational content that they've developed.
Well, let me tell you,
all their stores.
I sent my son to CU Boulder to get a broadcast degree and he was doing video editing classes. He said, Dad, these guys are terrible. I hate the stuff they're doing. I said, son, you need to learn the basics of video editing before you can do it. And of course now he's on TikTok and he's doing his own editing and it's much better than anything I would have ever imagined. Yeah. And because he's native, this is native to his, you know, it's vertical. How many years have I said, never shoot vertical video?
Yep.
I guess I was wrong. Here's an example, by the way. I'll give you an example of where Lisa's good camera trumped my camera. So this is, there was a detail in one of Gowdy's houses of that cherub, and I love that. That was the best I could do with the iPhone. Lisa had the same idea, and she was able to zoom in and then do post-processing and really get a great image of that cherub. So, but she had to do post. She doesn't mind post. I didn't want to do post. By the way, that's why I stopped using the Insta360. So the difference between, because I was able to get great video with the iPhone, the difference is with the iPhone, you have to decide before you press the button what you want a picture of, what's the subject. With the Insta, it takes everything. And then in post, you decide what you want the subject to be. So it's a little, you have to post it unless you're going to post a 360-degree video on YouTube. I will eventually put them all up there. But I have a 7 or 8 minute one where we're wandering through the Roman Forum and we're with a guide and it was wonderful. And it was perfect for the 360. But I still haven't edited it. I don't know if I'll ever edit it.
That's what I'm looking forward to when Apple and Google and all these other services really hone their AI editing tools where it will assimilate like a day's worth of random video and photos and give me a first.
Insta does that now. Insta has an AI thing that they do. That's apparently I didn't do it. I have to say, and I will, you know, I've been as AI, rather a mixed reality skeptic, Alex, and you and I have tussled over this for a long time, but that was the one place where I thought, okay, Alex was right, because I wouldn't want a VR headset as I'm wandering around ancient Rome.
Right.
But I would love AR spectacles where I could flip a switch and say, what did that monument look like
exactly
2,000 years ago? And you could wander through the forum and see it as it is today.
And yeah. Imagine being able to see people walking around and you hear the sounds and the music and the everything else.
I told our guide who's, you know, a Roman, grew up, or spent a life there. I said, you know, we're going to come back here in 10 years and we'll be wearing those. And you can still guide us, but we will be seeing what you're telling us about right now.
And it was nice to say that he would be still guiding you, because the thing that's going to happen.
I really won't need him. I know. Yeah.
Well, the main thing is that between GPS and ultra wideband, you'll be able to sit there and go, walk. And it knows that roughly it's got 20 minutes to talk to you while you're walking to the Colosseum.
Right.
And so it's going through it. And it goes, as you're walking, it knows where you're at. So it just interrupts and goes, oh, by the way, if you look to the right, these are the ruins of the baths whatever it is. And then, okay, now keep going straight. And if you go the wrong way, no, turn back. You're going the wrong way.
We're kind of already there. This is something Johnny Jett told me about, and I use this in Rome, IZI.travel. There are some commercial programs you can buy, but this is like a wiki done by people who, when they go somewhere, they record something. And as we wandered through Rome, you just leave it on and with your headphones in. And as you walk by something, it says on your left. And all of a sudden you'll hear about this thing, and then it's silent until you get somewhere else. But it's just small distance from what you just described, Alex. And I think that's absolutely coming.
Well, and absolutely, you know, and I wrote a business plan for this in 2000, because I was going around on a GPS on my, like a GPS.
Yeah, the phone knows exactly where you are.
And I was like, eventually this will be in cars, so this will be a lot easier.
We did that in Hawaii.
You can just wander around.
We bought a travel guide. It was on the phone, downloaded it, and we drove the road to Hana.
Right.
And it describes it as you're going. And it wasn't the best production. It was like kind of having your pompous uncle in the back seat saying, you know, over there,
right.
If you turn left now, the best shave ice in Hawaii. But it's still better than doing it on your own. And I think it's going to get better and better. So I'm now convinced, if we can get to that point where AR can be something lightweight that I can wear, still see the real deal. But if I want superimposed,
or not even wearing it around, like for instance, if you walk into, you know, you could walk to Gettysburg and go to Little Round Top.
Exactly.
And go,
yes.
You could be experiencing it all, but then there's like a little plaque, you know, on Little Round Top somewhere, and it just has like the headset, you know, symbol on it or whatever, and you stand on it and you put this on, and suddenly it just shows you what it would have been like during, the battle.
There are already QR codes everywhere.
Right.
You don't have to, but the
key is, though, is you wouldn't have to wear it around all the time. You just set it down. But that's what it comes back to, that first 10 seconds that I'm talking about, that has been a real problem for these, is like, how do I get to that thing? And so I need to be able to get to that thing and put it on and immediately have it just show me what I want to do. And when you reduce that friction, a lot of people would use it.
Yeah. I just like to see more stuff like that, though, transported strictly to a handheld device like your phone. Because if you are at Gettysburg, if you are at a lot of these really wonderful historic sites, maybe if you thought ahead, you have binoculars so that you can see things closer and see things that you think are more interesting. I don't want something to cover up my eyes and basically decide what I see and how it's enhanced. I would love to see something where, geez, what's that little mound over there, and hold up my phone, and now I'm seeing an annotation of, oh, well, actually, that is where a whole bunch of horses were buried because they were being killed so quickly that they just couldn't get them off the field. This is going to be a really, really big part of this equation, trying to figure out where are people going to want to put goggles on and take them off when needed, like binoculars will occupy 100% of your vision while you're using them, but then you put them down and you hang them around your neck? Or is our other technologies going to be better for that? I think that some of the best technologies are just ones that help technology get out of our way, as opposed to the ones that kind of create this digital layer between us and the world around us.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that some of these things, like when you build the technology, it's something that could easily work in both the, you know, with the phone. You can pick up the phone and just get the AR experience.
Right.
Or you can put the goggles on and get a deeper experience, but it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Sure.
I look forward to that day, and I hope I will be around, because Rome is example of somewhere or Gettysburg, where you really know there was all this history, but there's no trace of it, or very little trace of it left, and to be able to superimpose that would be amazing.
And you think about the number, when you think about the money related to this, if you think about the Rome and how many people come to Rome, I don't know what that number is.
It's probably it's amazing. 50 it's million, mind-boggling.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And imagine if 1% of them spent $30 on the guide that was this super interactive guide. What is that number? And then multiply it to all the other sites. It could be like that. So it's a big business. The hard part is getting over the risk, you know, managing the risk. And I think that that's going to be up to Apple. When it releases some of this stuff, it has to go out and pay people to do that, to take that risk, to absorb that risk, so that people can see what's possible.
Yep.
And then, because Apple needs to do that. That's what they didn't do very effectively with iBooks.
Right.
Is they didn't absorb the risk and create something that inspired people to make more of them.
Yeah. Once you prime the pump, the flow comes.
Yes. And with 6 years and, billions and billions of dollars, it would be worth spending $1 billion on content, which is, so it'll be interesting to see what Apple actually executes. But that was what I think that hopefully is a key learning from iBooks, was they just totally failed that that process because they didn't prime the pump. They went to established book textbook folks and thought that would be the answer, which was, I think, was clearly not.
Did you guys last week talk about Apple and CarPlay and GM? Is that an old story?
Oh, did we?
You did.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that resonates with me. One of the reasons I bought a Ford instead of a Tesla is because I wanted CarPlay. It really is worth it. Yeah. GM is joining Rivian and Tesla and not having CarPlay. But Ford says they're going to do CarPlay forever. Or at least until.
Well, and the thing is that the problem is that you have, Tesla was able to do that for a long time because they were the only ones with a really cool electric car, but we're past that now.
Yeah.
And so the thing is that I think Tesla is going to, there are going to be sales to people who are going, well, I really want my whole life integrated here. I don't want to necessarily jump out of that to jump into another car. So I think that's the challenge that Tesla's going to have, and Rivian and GM. I mean, GM is really like Rivian and Tesla. I kind of go, well, maybe
they get away with GM, it. GM, like, I don't know. That's crazy.
Okay, you're just like a bunch of other car companies. As far as you're commoditized, in my eyes, you're commoditized, and you just took something away that would be a key factor. So I just don't think GM has the juice to do that in the way that Tesla and Rivian do.
And never underestimate the power of nerds and people who want to build aftermarket stuff to figure it out. Because I'll tell you. Twit members Discord, while we were talking about it, somebody said, have you seen this thing? I think it's called CarLink Kit. And I had talked about the guy in Poland who had been building a Raspberry Pi to put CarPlay in a Tesla. Well, somebody has OEM'd basically that. And the way it works is you tether it to your phone, and then you connect your Tesla to the CarLink Kit's Wi-Fi that it's broadcasting, and you load it in a browser. And at that point, it's CarPlay in the web browser live in a Tesla. And that'll work with Rivian undoubtedly too, and that'll work with other things. So it's like, somebody's going to find a way, or you just get the best hack of all, which is the cup holder kit for your phone, and then you use that instead. And that's the thing about the car companies. And there was a story this week that actually talked to somebody at GM who basically said, yes, it is all about data and future revenue sources. We want to mine your data as a driver, and we want to then charge you for things or sell your data, and we're going to make a lot of money that way. And on one level, I get it, but I think the car is going to be another one of these battles between, do you want your privacy? Do you want it the way you want it? Or do you want to be a captive of the automaker? And I think fundamentally, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. We love our smartphones and we're going to use them.
Yeah.
And if a car maker wants to erect barriers for that, I think it's just going to hurt the car maker in the end, because the people are going to find a way to get around it.
Well, it's just dumb because the iPhone and Android too, by the way, get updated all the time. regularly, both hardware and software. Cars do not, and it's just dumb to take that out. By the way, it's to never underestimate the power of Geezer Nerd, who was the guy who came up with that.
Yeah, thumbs up to Geezer Nerd. And I definitely want to try this out. I have to find a Tesla that I have access to and give it a try. But it's such a cool idea, right? And it might be a little latency, but I love it. Like,
I've played with it a little bit. Does it have a browser? Ideal.
The cup holder is probably your go-to. And I actually wonder if this, in the long run, if this is an issue where CarPlay starts to go away, does Apple build a heads-up phone mode that's basically CarPlay on your phone or iPad? Because the advantage of CarPlay is that it's big, right? With big buttons and all of that. And I wonder.
Android Auto has its own phone-based UI.
So they could do that too. But in the end, it doesn't matter. In the end, I think we love our phones. Our phones are where our digital life is. And any car maker is so deluded that they think that we're going to cast away our phones because the car is where it's at. It's going to be sorely disappointing.
Chevy says, but wait, you're going to get free access to Google Maps and Google Assistant for 8 years.
No way. Google Maps?
In 8 years. It's free for 8 years. What more would you want?
You're also going into a generation that just cares less and less about the car.
They care a hell of a lot more about their phone than their car.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that they're just not in a position of leverage. So it's a little too little too late.
Yeah. Shady Mac app stores capitalize on ChatGPT gold rush. I don't know why Apple's allowing this, but there are now dozens of kind of fake ChatGPT apps using keywords like OpenAI and ChatGPT to kind of get you to use them. Maybe you recommended some while I was gone. Are there any iOS apps you would recommend for using ChatGPT? Man, just use Bing, right? I know that hurts your heart, but
I don't use any apps. I just use it through websites.
Use the website. So. Yeah.
Federico Vitici on Mac Stories did a fun, he wrote a shortcut that uses ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So you can use Siri to run a shortcut to do ChatGPT. And that's a fun thing. But no, this is Leo. I don't know what you're talking about here. The reason that we have the Apple
app. Of course, is to keep crap like this out.
Curated experience that's safe for everyone.
Yes. Now, when they come out with ChatGPT fart apps, then you'll have something. That I'm all in favor.
That's right.
Yes. Fart GPT, I think they call it. it's not something anybody should ever use. Good news stories continue to come in about emergency SOS. I'm sure you saw the one where some Utah college kids essayed a very challenging hike that got them to a canyon they could not get out of. 500 foot deep. They didn't have a cell signal. They had iPhones and were able to use their iPhones to save themselves. They could only get connectivity to the satellite every 20 minutes. So then this is kind of how it works. It's like batch mode. You send a little bit each time, but they were able to get rescue teams to where they were. Helicopter.
They could only see a fairly narrow bit of sky,
yes,
right?
Which
is why it was only every 20 minutes that they could get a signal in there. It's kind of amazing that they're down at the bottom of a hole, essentially, and still could get enough sky to send their message.
Amazing. And we knew this would happen, but that's a really great story, and I wanted to pass that along. I'm sure Apple will turn it into a commercial.
Those kids
are going to have to go down into the pit again. That's the only bad thing to do the ad. I just watched Gladiator, Ridley Scott's movie from 23 years ago, because it's all about ancient Rome. And next, we're going to watch Napoleon. Apple has paid Ridley Scott to do a giant movie called Napoleon, and Sony has previewed it at CinemaCon.
Yeah. A huge, huge battle scene. This is the movie with Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon.
So, oh, yeah, because that's great. He was Emperor Commodus in Gladiator, so it's fitting. You know, he can do all the rulers eventually.
Yeah.
Old school, big screen. They are going to release it, of course, in theaters.
Yeah. This is one of those deals that Apple made where it's like, if Ridley Scott wants a theatrical release, if Martin Scorsese wants a theatrical release, you say yes, and then it'll be on Apple TV not too long after that.
Yeah, exactly. And Sony, who produced the movie, doesn't have a streaming service. I don't know how they could not have a streaming service. Everybody, Joe down on the corner has a streaming service.
I think they do actually have some very niche streaming services, but the point is Sony is what they like to call in the biz a content arms dealer. They're happy to make, seriously, they do call themselves that. They're happy to make shows and movies for whoever wants to pay them.
You want a bazooka for your streaming service? We'll make it for you.
I got it here, right. Yeah. Like you want Seinfeld on Hulu? We can help you out with that. And it's been very successful for Sony. In fact, all those other companies that have studios and streaming services are all sort of like, oh yeah, we should probably sell stuff too.
Ridley Scott is 85 years old, continues to produce great movies.
Amazing.
And Deadline says this movie, it would make Barry Lyndon, it would make Stanley Kubrick jealous. Have you seen it, Andy? Did you see the clip?
I don't think they posted the clip yet. It's a huge, huge battle sequence and a Ridley Scott battle sequence. He's one of those few directors that knows how to use digital VFX such that they're like the anti-Marvel. It's not like everybody who's in that scene is going to feel like they are actually in that scene together, reacting to the exact same thing. And boy, you talk about a director that's capable of doing just scale and scope. I think the reason why they put Stanley Kubrick in that quote was that this was one of his decades long projects.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you go to there's a traveling museum exhibit Stanley Kubrick, his movies and a lot of his personal effects. And one of them is this massive library card catalog where he personally was putting in order every moment of Napoleon's life and cross-indexing them. So as he's working on this script and developing this, if he wants to know where was he the morning of September 3rd, 2 weeks before this battle, and was Josephine anywhere near at the time, he could answer that question. This was
I want to find that traveling exhibit. I'm a big fan of Stanley
Cooper. It's a really cool exhibit. Yeah. I got to see it in LA, and it's like, oh, I wish I had budgeted more time for this because he saved very few things. He was famous for throwing a lot of things away, but the things that they kept and put in this exhibit are choice. Napoleon's coming out in November, so it's like Oscar bait.
It's a Thanksgiving release, kids.
Yeah.
So as you know, everybody has Thanksgiving dinner. They go shopping on Black Friday, and then they take in a movie. I think I know where you'll be November 22nd.
I'm going to get my booster.
Go to a movie. You know, that's funny because I have not been to a movie since 2019, a movie theater since 2019. And I feel no desire to. I'm very happy at home with my QD OLED screen. Looks great. Surround sound. I'm happy.
I almost saw Avatar. That came really close.
I saw Avatar. It was worth it.
Really? You didn't mind being trapped in a movie theater for 3.5 hours?
You know, I saw it right at the very end of the run, so there wasn't that many people in the theater. And it was, because for me, a theater, there's like 8 seats I'm willing to sit in. And so I just look at, I go to a day that if those 8 are full, then it's sold out, right? And so I just kept on waiting until it was available, and me and the family went, and it was.
Was it IMAX or regular?
It was IMAX.
That's the one. I think it's the last bastion of going to a movie theater.
IMAX and IMAX. Yeah, James, Dolby, James Dolby Cinema and IMAX are the two.
Yeah,
yeah. God,
and he makes it worth it.
You know, but I haven't. You know, I saw Black Panther as well. The problem is, I went to see Dolby Cinema, and in Dolby Cinema there are these little blue lights that go down the stairway. And I can't not see them. Like, I don't know if they added them during COVID or something, but I can't not see them. And I can't go to a Dolby Cinema anymore because I can't. Yeah. I can see the blue of them on the screen.
Wow.
And I think, you know, and so I don't know if my wife says I can't see them. I don't know, even know what you're talking about. So it could just be me. But I can't not see them. Like, I can't, like, I just can't. Like, I keep on trying to look forward. I spend so much time, energy not looking at them that I don't see the movie anymore.
Yeah, I understand that. Once I took ayahuasca, I could not avoid seeing the machine elves everywhere. So it happens. And once you're once seen, you can't unsee it. You know
exactly,
what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Hi. Hi, Machine Elf. All right. I think we have deeply mined all the possible subjects we possibly could. I think there is nothing left in the well. So let me take a break, plug our club, and we will get your picks of the week in just a moment. However, I have a big thank you to our fabulous folks in Club Twit, because they really make a huge difference with their $7 a month. They are supporting what we do. It's getting harder and harder to be an independent podcast network, but I'm determined to make it work. But clearly, we need a club to have that happen. And you guys, you help us produce new programming. Doesn't exist on the regular network. That's where This Week in Space came from. Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks is back in the club. Thank you, club members. In fact, Scott did a review of that QD OLED. You can see that on coming up, Home Theater Geeks. There's also Micah Sargent's Hands on Macintosh, Paul Thurrott with Hands on Windows. We have the Untitled Linux Show, Stacey's Book Club, all of that club only on the Twit Plus feed. There's also the fabulous Discord, which is a great hang. Even when I was traveling in Europe, if I was jonesing a little bit, I would stop by there. And then I found out I don't need to stop by anymore, because Club Twit's Discord has an AI Leo who will answer any of your questions as I would. He can even do it in French, which I can't. So that's just one more fun thing. We have a lot of stuff. We have a Let's Play feature. We have our own Minecraft servers. We've played games online there, trivia and chess, fitness and food and Linux and movies, anything you would like to talk about, that's in there. And I think there's a future of social, frankly, is stuff like this, where it's a community of people with like interests. So you get the Discord. I didn't even mention the whole reason we started the club initially, ad-free versions of all the shows. Yes, you get those as well. You get special shows you don't get anywhere else. And you get the Twit Plus feed, which also includes content that isn't a show. It's stuff before and after shows, things like that. $7 a month. There's a family plan. Somebody just bought a family plan. Thank you. I don't remember your name, but thank you. There are corporate memberships as well. And that money, none of that money goes into my vacations or anything like that. All of that goes to fund. It goes to John Ashley. Frankly, it goes to fund and John Slanina. It goes to fund the Johns. And without the Johns, we wouldn't have a Twit. So thank you for keeping the lights on, keeping the content flowing, and allowing us to launch new stuff. This Week in Space was started in the club and is now, of course, a wonderful show that's available to you all. If you're not a member, actually, I know you're not a member, because if you're a member, you wouldn't even hear this, because it's ad-free, remember? But if you're not a member, twit.tv/club, and you can become, as the folks in the club say, one of us. One of us. Twit.tv/club. We would love to have you in the club, Club Twit. And I thank everybody, even though you can't hear this, I thank everybody who has joined the club. I really appreciate having you in there. It's so much fun. I'll see you in there in a little bit. All right, Andy. All right. I know you guys have been doing picks of the week without me, but I'm ready for your pick of the week for this week.
I thought that I would just continue the vibe and recommend Day One.
Good.
We already talked about how much we like it. I was going to add a few notes that I started using it as kind of a health thing, really, because, sometimes my brain doesn't work so good. And sometimes I've got habits that I'm trying to do better on and habits I'm trying to build. And you know what? It's enough to just simply determine that you're going to do better tomorrow than you did today. But however, once you get yourself in the habit of just writing down, here's the exercise that I got or didn't get today. Here's what my mood was today. Was I depressed? Was I really, really excited about stuff? Did I get lots of work done? Was I anxious about anything? Did I do house cleaning? Just stuff like that. And just a quick paragraph about here's what basically what happened today. Once you get in the habit of that and you're able to look back 3-4 months of these daily things, and you're trying to figure out, you're trying to correlate, why did I not get much done like in the middle of March? And you find out that, oh, I was distracted by A, B, and C. And sometimes it's just as simple as, wow, I actually am doing a lot of good stuff. I'm not doing perfectly, but I'm on track. I'm doing good things. And it does help with it does help with my mental health, does help with my physical health, does help me make sure that I keep cleaning the house when I should. And just as we said during the show itself, the ability to simply blog to myself, just things that I'm observing and photos that are just for me and just for future me, like a year from now, or 5 years from now, that is one of the best gifts I think that you can give yourself. Has an immense number of really, really great features we haven't touched on. Obviously, it will sync to the cloud and sync across all devices. So you got a Mac app, you got an iOS app, an iPad app, even an Android app. And for $35 a year, you can sync securely across every single device. You can also create templates and have multiple journals. So for instance, I have a daily journal template that is just basically a status, literally a bureaucratic like JL-141 form that I fill out at the end of every day just to simply get the basics down. Even if I don't want to be lyrical about, dear diary, oh, what a fandango of expressions happened today as footbeans. Well, again, what did you eat today? Did you go for a walk? Did you go for a bike ride? And just when you make it as simple as possible through these templates, you really do get into these habits, and it really does help out. And it's the company that makes Day One has been around for a long, long time. They were bought out by Automattic a few years.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's right. Matt Mullenweg's company, the WordPress folks. Yeah.
The company has WordPress. So they're not going away anytime soon. Also, they know how to create a secure and sturdy backend for cloud syncing and for these kind of transactions. So you know that this is a really, really well-made, sturdy app. Can't recommend it highly enough. It is, you can download the free version that just has some of this top features cut off. So if you want to spend a month or two just seeing what daily journaling does for you, or again, daily notes to yourself, daily blogging to yourself can do. If you get into that habit, I think that you'll find that that's a very cheap $35 a year.
It was perfect for a travel diary because it just made it super easy just every night just to make a note of, you know, some of the things we saw. So lots of fun. And by the way, you can import your Instagram into a journal. So if you missed a few years, but you were Instagramming, you can bring it in there and import it all in. So
and you can export it to just about anything. So even if you want to use this as like your daily for National Novel Writing Month, and this is what you write in every single day, do that too. It's very, very flexible. You can do whatever you want with it. Yep. It's great.
I agree. Jason Snell, pick for us.
Yeah, this is a relatively new app, and it's using Safari extensions to do something that you kind of couldn't do on iOS before. It's called Surfed. It's free with an in-app purchase. You know, you can do a lifetime or a subscription. And what it is it's a bookmarking and browser history manager. It basically runs as a Safari extension on your iOS device and logs every page you visit with some metadata. You can even do some AI auto tagging and stuff, but basically it's going to give you a browser history that's searchable, that isn't going to get deleted, isn't going to roll off. And then you can use tags to organize things. You can have automations that kick off based on what sites you visit. There's all sorts of other stuff it does. I just love the fact that this is like the Safari extensions is just this little crack that you can stick a wedge into and use a tool to do something that is perfectly normal to do on a computer, but not so easy to do on an iOS device. And so they use it's very clever. They use Safari extensions. The extension knows where you're going, and then it logs that to its app. And then you can use the app to browse through your browser history and organize it and pull things out and say, well, you know, what was I looking at, in a much more organized way than just the random Safari history that, you know, goes for a while and then vanishes. And I always search my Safari history on iOS and I can't find anything. I don't know what is going on with the search there. So if you're somebody who really has this, like, I'm very frustrated. The moment I saw Surfed, I was like, oh my God, install that right now, because I have great value in finding that thing that I was looking at 2 weeks ago and being able to retrieve it. And now I know that Surft is cataloging all that stuff and I can find it fairly easily when I need it. So yeah, just a fun little utility. It's for iOS and Mac and it'll sync and, you know, do all of those nice things, but it's really unique and clever for iOS.
You're a Python expert. I might have to tap you because I just bought a e-ink hat for my Raspberry Pi, seven color e-ink hat, the inky impression. Yep. And I've mounted it, my Raspberry Pi on it. I've been able to run their demo programs, but it's all in Python. So, and I was thinking we could put it in the studio and have it, I don't know, show the weather or show the time or whatever.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some great Python projects that I've kind of adapted. I'm not an expert. I am a Python, you know, hacker of a low degree, but, yeah, I've got an e-ink display in my kitchen that is a calendar.
Yeah. I thought it'd be fun.
Stuff in it. It is a lot of fun to play with.
And it's not complicated Python. I mean, they have a library that you import and then it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. You basically pass it. Ultimately, what you're doing is you're passing an image file and saying, draw this on the screen. And then all the rest of the Python is getting data sources and building an image that it.
Yeah. And I guess actually I could do that in a different language and then glue it to the Python interface.
You could. You could, in fact, have it load that image from some other source and display it.
That's right. That's what I'll do.
As smarter, as dumb as you want it to be. Yeah.
Because it comes with a very simple, this is the Python program that displays an image. It's really simple. So then I could have some other program on every second write a new image and then have the display suck it up.
As an e-ink, it's going to take a long time to refresh, especially the color. So you probably want to do it once an hour or something like that.
Okay. Which makes it a useless as a clock, but okay.
I wouldn't use it as a clock. I wouldn't do that. But as I have mine as like, it's got the today's weather forecast and tomorrow's weather forecast and all the events for the next week and stuff like that. And, And there's a dad jokes API.
Oh, that'd be fun.
On API. So you can load a dad joke.
Some dad jokes.
Today's dad joke. Yeah, great.
We're gonna do this on Ask the Tech Guy. I'll probably do it as a several week project, but if you want to know more, tune in with Micah and Leo as we do Ask the Tech Guys Sundays from 2 to 5 Eastern on Twitter right before This Week in Tech. It's not expensive, $70, seven color, 7.3 inch, 800 by 480, I think, e-ink display. Yeah, I'll have to figure out what the refresh rate is. It seemed like it was fairly fast. Maybe I could just change it every minute. That would be good enough.
Some of those colored ink displays takes a minute to draw in full color.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to play with it a little bit. Okay. Good to know. Mr. Alex Lindsay, it's your pick of the week.
Yeah, so when we were in Vegas covering NAB, we had a little bit of a disaster.
Uh-oh.
And that was the bandwidth available at the
I know all about that. I could have warned you there.
We were in the press room and we were trying to upload things and it was just ugly, you know. It was like we have 1 meg a second, you know, and or sometimes less.
Yeah.
And so one of the folks in office hours has a company that actually solves this problem, and they brought the router in and handed it to us and said, try this. And this is called a company called Disaster Group. Now this is created by a guy named Keenan Campbell, and Disaster Group, he comes from like basically FEMA style responses where they need to pay attention to things. And he got into office hours because he was like driving around during snowstorms, streaming from his truck, talking about stuff.
This is what the Live View did. In fact, this is what Colleen built for us when we were at CES trying to do the show. She had it was in a plexiglass case. She was so cute. She was amazing what she made. And it bonded a bunch of different, but I mean, that was a hard thing to do. Now you just get this router.
Well, and the thing is this has 3 modems in it. It automatically connects. It bonds them for you.
Yeah.
You don't have a server on the other side. This isn't just for video. This is just bandwidth.
Right.
You now just are able to plug it in.
So. How much were you able to get?
We were getting about, I think it was like 20 up and, you know, it was,
but it was,
you know,
consistent
in a bad area, nice. But it was,
oh yeah,
consistent. It was like 20 up and down,
yeah,
which was a solid 20 times what we were getting otherwise.
And obviously you have to have an account with the cellular carriers. Do you have to provide a SIM? So
that's what this is. This has the SIMs built in. So this has got three SIMs built into it. So I've used other ones that are PepWave and, you know, but then we have to get the SIMs. I have to organize the SIMs. I have to negotiate all those things. And that's one of the reasons we use LiveUse for videos, because I don't have to think about that. I don't have to think about where the SIMs are going or you know, just plug it in and it works. And so so this has AT&T, Verizon and T-Mobile installed. It's got three modems installed. It's about $1,200, $1,300, but you get 2 gigs a month for free throughout the year to have this. And this is a piece of hardware. It's not a piece of software. But the main thing that it solved that our PepWaves didn't solve was that I don't have to negotiate. I don't have to know anything. I literally plug, this is a tiny little box, like half you. I plug this thing in, I plug internet into it, and we're done.
You know, it's like a good idea. Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Wherever I am, wherever there's cell coverage, I can just kind of turn this thing on, and it's not me, again, negotiating for something. It's bonded cellular. In some places, it was much faster than the 20 that we were getting at the conference center. So it just depends on what's available. But being able to have it all pre-configured, being able to manage it with a web portal, being able to do all those things, you know, and have it just be, you just turn, all I did is just turn it on and plug it in, and it was, we were off to the races. And so I think for some people out there, you're going to see that and go, oh, that would be useful. You know, there's a lot of people that won't go, like, I don't know why I would use that, but there's a handful of folks like me that you need those things. And this combined, you can also have Ethernet as one of the sources. And so this combined with like a, you know, you can have this with a Starlink. So you'd have cellular and Starlink all bonded together as well.
Ooh,
so those are things that you can. Yeah. So you just have, you know, when you're trying to connect somewhere in the middle of nowhere, it's kind of a useful thing. And again, it's not that that's the only solution, but it's the easiest solution and it's the least expensive version of it. So anyway, I would highly recommend it. And again, it's built by somebody who's had to do this a lot. And it was really useful. And I was, and I think that I was like, oh, this is, and at first I thought, well, there's a lot of things to do it. But when I started researching all the things it did, I was like, oh, I don't know if there's anything else that does that.
So, plus you get a really cool bright red box that you could put in your rack that says disaster. And disaster. It just gives you a certain je ne sais quoi. Disastergroup.us, disaster recovery router, or NAB bandwidth in recovery.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, it's always a nightmare in Vegas.
It's one of those things that I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens with all these conferences. You know, conferences are desperately trying to hang on to everybody, you know, like, you know, and NAB, I think, is doing better than most. They had about 65,000, but that's about half of what they had pre-COVID.
Wow.
And, but NAB is still a big conference, but like my wife signed up for a conference and she doesn't want to go now. You know, she was going to go there and then she realized there was a virtual one. She goes, can I move from the physical to the virtual? And they were like, no, you can't. Like, you can't do it. You lose your money, because they definitely need people to show up in person. And so it'll be interesting to see how this bandwidth stuff starts to change, because these conferences have to figure out how to do things more digitally, because, you know, it's never going back, you know, like to where it was before. And the key is finding the new. And I don't think the NAB bandwidth for the press is not the new yet. But yeah, what I will say is that NAB definitely supported. They definitely understand that there's something happening there, and they supported office hours. I think we had like 15 people on the ground and then another 30 offsite, and we were passing files around. And so
another million-dollar idea that Colleen Kelly just let fly by the wayside.
She does okay. I think she does okay.
She's doing all right.
She has a lot of ideas.
The LiveU, which eventually replaced the box that she made, was at the time a backpack. That's what I wore when I crowd surfed.
I have one in the other room.
They're a little smaller now. I'm looking at the LiveU.
Small. The LiveU 800. The LiveU 800, because you had the 400 and then I rented two 600s. So we did, with that LiveU 800, we did a HDR 5.1 stream from the floor wandering around.
Wow.
So we were, you know, five.
Wow.
And people said, you really need to do 5.1. It turns out you just feel like you're there.
Oh, I
you're
bet.
Watching on like yeah. you hear every all the cacophony, and there's a loud booth on yeah. the right and super everything cool. else. And so we're going to do we're going to Cinegear. We're going to try to do 4K HDR 5.1. Isn't that, you know, cuz why not?
Cuz we can.
Crazy, but yeah, well, you know,
I'm still the only guy who's crowd surfed with one of those on, though.
Huh? Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know, Colleen had a party, and it was like everybody who's in encoding showed up at this party in Vegas. And just what happens in Vegas was stay in Vegas. But I will say that
it was a good party. That's all you have to say. It was
if a bomb had hit that building during NAB.
Oh wow!
You wouldn't have any more videos.
Oh wow!
it was like the people who were there were. It was a lot of people who were making a lot of decisions.
She's about great. Our studio. First studio engineer really built a lot of the technologies that we still use in some form or fashion today. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen, for my first Mac Break Weekly back. It's been fun. You'll find Andy Iannocco at WGBH in Boston. Where and when this week?
I'm on Thursday at 12:30. Not in the BPL. You can go to the Boston Public Library. It's a lovely place, but I won't be there, and neither will the show. Go to WGBHnews.org to stream it live or later.
And of course, Iannocco.com, right?
Still working on it. Can I tell you that ChatGPT has been really, really helpful? Because every single thing I've shouted at 3:30 in the morning while trying to get like templates done has been, all I want is a header on the top of a blog page that's centered and no white space on top of it, no white space to the left and the right of it. So here's the code. Well, where do I put it? Here's where you put it. Okay. Wow. Thank you.
Wow.
I don't know why I'm shouting. You're being very helpful right now.
That's good. Thank you. Sixcolors.com is the place where you find where Mr. Jason Snell hangs his hat. If you want to see all the many things he does, and there really are quite a few, go to sixcolors.com/Jason. He's the one. Absolutely. He's the only.
And there's lots of podcasts, lots of writing, lots of things.
All of them well worth subscribing to. Anything you want in particular you would like to plug this week?
I think fans of this show might love to listen to Upgrade, where Mike Hurley and I also talk about Apple news every week, but on Monday instead of Tuesday. So it's totally different.
So it scoops us, basically.
Except for all the things that happen Monday afternoon.
Oh, that's true. So for Monday afternoon stories, tune in Mac Break Weekly. For all the rest, it's Upgrade at Relay.
It is really a different vibe. I got to say, not just because that is sort of him and me going back and forth. And here we've got the big panel. But like, I don't know. There's something about it. They are very different shows with some stories in common, but, you know, not a lot.
And sometimes yours are even as long as ours, but not usually.
Nah. Not really.
Thank you, Jason. Alex Lindsay, officehours.global is his fun time. 090.media is how to hire him. What are you talking about this week on Office Hours?
This week is like we slowed down, and what we do is we have these 1 week every 3 or 4 months that we go, okay, what do we want to talk about in our second hours for the next 3 or 4 months? And so it's really brainstorming. So we just brainstorm all week.
It's brainstorming week on Office
Exactly.
Hours.
But last week was all NAB.
Yeah.
So we there was a lot of NAB stuff. And then on Gray Matter .show, we have an interview with Justine.
Wonderful.
That'll be dropping tomorrow. And so we had, it was a great, Michael Krasny, you know, he's got some skill when it comes to interviewing.
I want to hear that because, I'd like to know more about Justine. So that's great. That's graymatter.show, Michael Krasny. Oh, you had Walter Murch last week?
Walter Murch dropped last week. And it was, it's probably the best interview of Walter Murch I've ever heard. Like it was an incredible
legendary editor and sound designer. He did,
but it was all over the place. It was all of his, everything from like philosophical things that he has about movie making to what is he using now. It turns out he's experimenting with Resolve, but he's using Premiere, but he used to use Final Cut.
Well, it's funny because Apple basically got him to use Final Cut on Cold Mountain. And developed Final Cut with his feedback. Like, this thing sucks. This is terrible. So, wow, that's a big deal.
He's fascinating.
That's a
fascinating guy. And so, you know, so a really good interview from last week. And then we've got Justine this week. So we're kind of bouncing around and lots of the interviews just keep getting better. So.
Oh, I'm looking at all the great people you have on. I mean, this is really an amazing roster. Yeah,
it's a, you know, Michael Krasny's got a pretty deep Rolodex.
Yeah, no kidding.
His ability.
No kidding.
So, yeah. So a lot of really, really
nice folks. Well, that's what you want to watch or listen to. It's audio only, right?
Yeah.
Which is smart. Very smart.
I got you into video.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Alex. And then you go,
we do video. So if you watch it live, if you're part of the group and you watch it live.
Oh, you can do that.
We do stream it video. We just don't post it later yet because we're still kind of experimenting with the process.
Good enough.
And so we're using Zoom ISO and doing a bunch of other things and playing with it. So, yeah. So we're not publishing the videos yet, but we're doing just audio right now.
Oh, I'm going to listen to the next two for sure. graymatter.show, officehours.global. Thanks to all of you for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1800 UTC. If you want to watch us live, it's live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live in our IRC, irc.twit.tv, run by our great community. Of course, there's our official Discord, which is part of the club. twit.tv/clubtwit. You can get the show on demand in a variety of ways. Certainly the website's one place to go, twit.tv/mbw. The website will also lead you to links to your favorite clients, podcast clients, so you can subscribe. And there's also a YouTube channel you can go to from there. And if you want, you know, to share the video, that's probably the easiest way to do that, is get a clip from YouTube. All of that, twit.tv/mbw. Thanks for joining us. It's great to be back. I will see you next week. And don't forget, June 5th. We're very excited. We'll do our live coverage at WWDC. But now, my friends, you got to get back to work because break time is over. We'll see you next time.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology. So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.